it took me, I think I discovered Salesforce and I loved it. And then it took me a year, I'd say 8-9 months to get that first job. And I was not Salesforce certified.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to the Textual Talk Podcast, man. I'm your host, HD. This is episode 37. Look, I'm finally on my numbers right. And I just want to start this off with a good vibe, man. Shout out to Rachel Marks, man. She was on one of my episodes before, Breach Please. And this is her. Y'all hear? Let me give her some gunshots real quick. I'm going to turn it up for y'all a little quick. And then we're going to bring our guests in, man. I just want to get the vibe right. You know what I'm saying? If you got a song you want me to play, your own song, send it to me. If I like it, I'm going to play it. I would sing because it's really a vibe, but
turn it upside down. Yeah. I don't need you to tell me that I'm pretty to validate my beauty. I just need you.
That was Need You by Rachel Marks. And now we finna go ahead and really get into the podcast, man. I know y'all ain't come here to listen to music, but we got a grateful and special guest today, man. Kim Barnes of Lipstick and Tech. And we finna rock out for y'all. Let's get it. What's going on, Miss Kim? How you doing today?
Good day to be alive, man.
Man, appreciate you for stopping by and joining us. Guys, this is another one of those exclusive, elusive guest that I've been trying to get on probably for some months now. We finally got some time, to go ahead and get this thing straight. A little bit of straightening amigos. But anyways, without further ado, I'm going to let our guest introduce herself for us real quick.
Sure. Hello, everyone. My name is Kim Barnes. I am a Salesforce consultant, but also a Salesforce-specific career strategist, and I help entry to mid-level tech professionals launch and transition into cloud computing careers with a hyper-focus on Salesforce career paths and job opportunities here in the U.S. And I'm really passionate about leading others to the same path that I was in. I came from a sort of technical background, but kind of let go what I was originally doing and decided to become a Salesforce professional. And I think the community itself can also benefit from a lot of diversity. And so I love speaking to women and minority clients.
Nice. I like your pitch. I know for a fact you be pitching that thing else. Perfect. No miss words, no ums, no oohs. I like that. So we'll just get right into it. Cool. A little bit about your background, I guess. What were you doing before you got into, Salesforce? What were you doing then before that? Did you transition from something that was non-technical? Feel free to, go on as long as possible. Pretty sure this will help somebody.
Yeah. So mine is, I consider myself very grateful considering the path that I went in, because I got a technical degree for information systems. I think a lot of people have heard something similar, they got this degree. And then just like every other college student who leaves, and I got discouraged from all those programming interviews that I went on and was like, well, this is maybe I don't want to be a code monkey. And it's just, it wasn't not to deter anybody else from doing it, because it's an amazing career path. And there's so much opportunity there, but I just figured for somebody who was really interpersonal and I didn't want to be behind a desk, and I wasn't really seeing the vision yet for becoming a manager of some sort. And so I took a help desk job, which honestly, I think anybody who's like, I don't know what I want to do in tech, take the help desk job. It is eye-opening. I figured out very quickly, of course, getting job experience, but figured out really quickly what I liked and didn't like. And because of the great conversations that I had in the office, I had a person at the office who was like, hey, we're trying to implement Salesforce and they don't know what they're doing. Can you help out? And so I had learned a lot of business requirements gathering with school. So at least I had a little bit of that academic background to lean on. And then as I was getting into this tech, I'm like, actually, this is really cool. I love the marriage of business and technology. I think the world ain't changing for somebody who doesn't have that vision either. And so I found my fit in that, but I'm sure there's plenty of other tech resources out there. But one of the reasons why I actually found myself to where I am today is because I remembered how excruciatingly challenging it was to try and jump into that ecosystem. But fortunately, with the grace of I put in a lot of hours outside of the office to study up. And when I would come into the office, say, hey, can I pitch in for something? And it took a year. Don't get me wrong. I was trying to move out of state and I was also trying to learn all this new stuff and do an entire career transition. Cause it's going from one tech or one STEM degree even to another STEM field isn't as easy as people think it is. But with the right marketing strategy, and I really do mean marketing strategy when I say this, and being able to tell your story, I'm now very confident in my career that if I wanted to just nuke what I was doing and go somewhere else, I'd be fine because I know what are the things, I know how to pick up the knowledge through networking and through studying up. But not everybody has that confidence. And it's not even just confidence at a certain level. At a certain level, it's just the commitment to just keep learning. And that's how I eventually got into this. Okay, I'm officially a Salesforce admin. Now what? And Salesforce has really great resources that and it's just grown over the years of you can do this on your own. And what I thought was incredible about it was the fact that I had talked to colleagues, in my network, who had come from finance, who had come from I'm blanking on the name of the woman, but they come from the arts, and it's just amazing to see that. And that's why I have such passion for we need more of us in here. So I think that interest in learning is what really got me to that transition from an IT help desk person to a Salesforce admin. And then from there, the sky was the limit. I had a really great foundation for business analyst work. And it just so happens that as I was going through that, I was I want to get in front of clients. Oh, well, here you go. Just gain some enough experience so I can get in front of clients. So I don't officially technically have the consultant title through my office. But as far as I'm concerned, I work for a consulting company. I'm in their Salesforce business group. I am a consultant. So, and again, lipstick and tech was a relatively new invention through this this self-discovery, frankly, of going from help desk job to Salesforce.
But that's dope. You said a lot. I mean, shoot, you brought up some stuff and that we can dive into.
Sure.
But so the funny thing is, well, ironically, you brought up you have a degree, I guess, in CIS, right?
Yeah, yeah. Every university does it differently. Yeah.
Yeah. So my second video was about why you should it really is not why you should get a CIS degree. Or I kind of explained why I chose it. But mm-hmm. I'm in the process of scripting out or redoing that video and telling people maybe why they should and technically why they should just kind of avoid it at all costs. My experience with it through my university is it was very high level and vague. So you pretty much don't specialize in anything when you come out and you spread yourself so thin, you don't know much because we own a quarter system. So we would do classes, every quarter. And so there's no, consistency there. And you throw in those different interviews. It was tough. I mean, I got my break. Like I said, I helped this, but anything else was hard to do. I mean, granted, I didn't really know how to navigate college. I'm trying to show my brother stuff now.
I have okay, I don't know how to describe it because I'm not that passionately upset about it, but I think any person that puts in the money to go to college should not passively just pick a school. do not just pick a school. Like, it's, you know, when we're talking Ivy Leagues, I understand it's very different because the Ivy, at the Ivy League level, the network that you surround yourself, like, so much of that money goes into the network, and then you're set for life. Like, you could right. probably transition back and forth. It doesn't matter. You've got Princeton on your title. But, like, as great reputation, and I'm happy to say that I went to Purdue University, and as much of a great reputation as Purdue has, funny enough, I went to Purdue, which is an engineering school, didn't go for engineering.
No, same here. My undergrad was at Louisiana Tech University. Oh, okay. They're known for engineering.
Yeah.
But they didn't really show love to CIS either.
No, but you know, I didn't even start at that university with, you know, like CIT. I started in computer science thinking, oh, I'm just going to learn programming. That was a huge mistake for me because Purdue University's science, like the emphasis on the science part.
Right.
And you could always, you can, there's a whole bunch of rabbit holes about, like, do you need to learn like algorithms to become a good programmer? I am not qualified for that conversation, but I am qualified to tell you that I am the plan A, B, C, D, E gal. And I didn't look at just the title of the degree. I looked at the actual classes that I was taking. And that was a huge contender for how I was going to, what schools I was going to apply to. Because a lot of what you're describing is very similar to the things that I was learning in when I compared to other universities. The reason why I went to this school specifically is because I took networking classes. Like, I actually had to do like projects with networking.
You had to do like a network design implementation class? Network.
I had one or two of those, which I was very happy that I took because I learned very quickly cybersecurity ain't for me. Not going to do it. business, like a lot of this, these tech classes, I'm telling you, business gathering, requirements gathering, I actually took like a graduate course in project management. Like, these are actually really great things to have on your resume. And I just like had this vision of like, I'm going to pick it, you know, they crafted a really great program. And so,
right.
And, you know, obviously the hard part is just getting in. At that time, I wasn't thinking about, oh, no, that. And I'm very grateful I wasn't thinking about the money. I'm thinking about it now because I'm going back to school. But take a very careful look at what the classes are, because, you know, eventually what's going to happen is you're going to go in the interview and you have to have these conversations about like, oh, well, what are the projects that you're doing? What have you learned in the school? What have you picked up from it? And like academics and academia is very different from corporate America. So you have to draw the line. And I know for a lot of people, they don't know how to draw that line. So a struggle for the ages, if I couldn't like put it any better than that. But I know for me, the discussion about like, okay, I got the CIT degree. I know people with my degree that did become engineers, who did become programmers. And just, you know, sometimes you have to admit to yourself, like, I'm just not good at that. And so that's what I think as far as like the ROI of a certification, won't get you to the finish line, but it sure helps getting your foot in the door. So, And not to dismiss my 4-year degree, like traditional.
No, no, no.
Yeah. First conversation that I have with people a lot of the time is like, because I work with an apprentice and she was like feeling really discouraged because she's getting this incredible experience at my company. And I was just like, got to power through it, man. Because if you want to move anywhere else, traditional companies, especially banking, you know, all the money is in banking. If you are motivated by money, you have to get the 4-year degree, even if it's in finance, even if it's in the arts. Like, you can get the experience later, but you got to get the 4-year degree.
So you brought up something, a good point. And I think one of the issues also was that we had to take like, it's not the rest, the degree wasn't trash. It's just, it wasn't right. structured good enough. And then show us how to sell ourselves enough. Because we took some good classes. Like, for example, like my supply chain class was hard, but I learned a lot.
Yeah.
But on top of that, you know, we took, like I said, network design and implementation, system analysis and design. We did database class. We did, I took a forensic class.
These are all
class.
Great stuff. Yeah.
Right. So they were on my resume as like, you know, course related, you know, schoolwork, however. But mm-hmm. what should have happened is if I would have had somebody that I could have leaned on back then, that should have said, hey, what projects did you do in that class? You know, boom. Oh, list what you did in your capstone class. Oh, like, because yeah. we had to design.
I didn't even have a capstone. I didn't even have a capstone. I know a lot of people in other schools did. I did not. But no, I. It's ghetto out in here.
Yeah. But see. Yeah. But no, you're right, though. I mean, but I think where I'm leaning at now is I feel like an old head now. I just made 30. I've probably right now. I graduated from undergrad in 2013, but I was doing mm-hmm. IT stuff since like 2012. So technically I'm like 10 years in mm-hmm. just in general, but I've circled back and talked to the head professor that used to be my professor that's over mm-hmm. that program now.
Yeah.
The classes are similar, but the thing that I saw that is an issue now is, and we'll get into some other questions later, but what I mm-hmm. find out with schools a lot is like, they aren't paying attention to what's on the actual job descriptions, meaning they aren't teaching some of the classes that would be teaching the softwares or programs that people would need when it's time for them to get out of school. Therefore, they don't have a lot of experience. The schools has the resources. They just need to change, you know, that stuff like the course didn't come with the curriculum didn't come with any class that, you know, say, oh, you got to pass the cert at the end or anything. I'm like, y'all should look into that because you're putting your students at a disadvantage to everybody else if you're having to make them go. I met with plenty of people that are in a school but still come for me to coaching and stuff like that because school just isn't giving, you know, what does a lot of them say? It's giving. It's not giving what they need.
It's what it's meant to give. Yeah.
That's the whole issue. Like, I don't think it's a waste. I just think it needs to be restructured. I think the first 2 years need to be classes in their major, and then the last year and a half needs to be some type of dedicated apprenticeship or clinical, just like medical students do.
Yeah.
Then we have less people coming out of school not knowing how to really do anything, and they'll know how to do something. They should be able to get a job. Now, it's going to pay the best? No. Mm-hmm. But that's the way, if I was running a university and if I ever tried to go do something at a university, that's what I would pitch to them. I know that's hard to set that up infrastructure wise. You're going to need companies that want to help, or maybe you can do it within the actual university.
Yeah.
I mean, they all the same things that's in corporate, like universities hire for most of those same jobs. Maybe the team isn't as big, but that could be something they could look into. And if y'all steal my idea while we're talking, I will find you.
I will find you. No, frankly, I'd be right on board with you. I think one of the easiest ways to do it, and this is why I say like the school is so important, because for me, like, you know, that introductory course that everyone gets slapped in the beginning of freshman year to learn more about like how to become a more culturally sound person, which these are really important conversations to have. It would be so simple in the last 2 years of university to invite speakers. And not even, because when you're in the class, when you're in the classroom setting focused on the academic parts of like the actual content of like what's needed for software management, what's needed for like database management, like all this other stuff, your head is so much in focused on the details that you can't appreciate the big picture until like further into the process. And so I feel like this is such an easy thing to fix. Like this, even the tiniest thing, like, yeah, I'm sure as a senior, I would have been like, ugh, I don't need this. But I would have only been like, ugh, I don't need this if I had an internship. But like, I would have regretted it a year later, probably, because then I would have been like, oh, you know, maybe I should have been paying attention. And I actually feel like I've gotten that exposure in grad school, which is hilarious because I'm like, I needed it then. Most people aren't going to grad school these days, and at least for tech, but like,
listen,
I have my own conversations about that.
No. You're right, because shout out to Black Heights. I was on Black Heights YouTube channel and I said this, and I've said this to many people. Undergrad needs to be structured like grad school. because grad school actually gives you things that 9 times out of 10, if you hadn't done that work yet, you're going to do. So I had a leg up on some of the people when I did my grad program. I graduated, dang it, it's going to be almost 4 years, December. But anyway, some of the stuff we were doing, I was actually taking back to work with me and implementing those things because it was stuff that you do. I mean, I'm talking about any, like something simple as, well, it's not small, it's big. Introducing a new product or service to the company and how to get approval for it and how to conduct those user tests and get user acceptance and all those things. Like I'm doing that right now at my company and I was doing it years ago. And that's stuff that sticks. You remember these projects you did? Like it was crazy, but one of the things in one of my harder projects in grad school started, I forgot what was it? Was this an enterprise architecture? I can't remember. And I think I got the project somewhere. But, you know, one of the first things you got to do is do a statement of work. Hey, what's going to be entailed in this, you know, that you're offering us? What's in scope? What's out of scope? You know, and I see all those things now. Like,
oh, my God. Yeah.
Right. My last company, you know, the client will want us to do something. We'll say, hang on. We're going to wait because we're going to have to modify that contract and get the money right. Because technically, that's not a service we provide y'all based on our statement of work. Those things that's going to stick with people in class. I mean, some of the stuff is cool undergrad, but it overloads their mind. Like we got to get to teaching what they need to know and then let them learn the stuff, you know, that they would like to know or they're interested in on their own time. That's what I feel.
And they'll discover it with time. And like one of the best pieces of advice I got from a professor of IT management at that school was like, he was like, man, if I were you, I'd just start working. Just work and then go back to school. To this day, I accredit that to my success because I absorb so much of grad school because I know what on earth I'm talking about. I've observed this and I have such meaningful conversations, especially with, funny enough, with part-timers because we're working. So we know, we see it every day. But I want to encourage everyone as well to recognize that when your school doesn't cut, you lose out. You will lose out if your university isn't thinking about it. So it's more important than ever to step up. Like you have to step up for yourself. And that's why I think for people, like the bare minimum is looking at what's online. And you don't even have to participate. But I've gotten so much value out of participating, obviously, in like online discourse. I'm not trying to pick fights with people. I got a brand to protect. I think everyone has a brand to protect at this point. But and brand is a strong word for what I'm actually talking about. I just think like you still have to be respectful, obviously. But it's in, when you lose out on like – you're saying like, oh, I'm not learning this. And like, I got this experience at school. What can I do with it? You have to upskill. Like everything is getting more competitive now. And there's no such thing as like, and I say this, but then I, of course, turn around and in my head. I go in a spiral of like, oh, what's the easiest certification I can do to pad my resume? It's like, don't think about the easiest certification. Think about what is the most relevant to that next step. So if you are a Salesforce admin and you want to become a BA, what are the things that I got to think about? Oh, I got to think about like, am I getting this experience at work? Can I skip the whole certification process in the first place? Which I was very grateful I was, but it's going to come and bite me. I already know it's going to come and bite me in a year or two if I'm like looking for promotions and they're going to be like, hey, yeah, did you get the paperwork? And I'm going to be like, no. So I, you know, do as I say, not what as I do. Right. So we're trying to build really emotionally intelligent and flexible work professionals. Now, listen, you and me, man.
You said a magic word. No lie, I might have to bring you on and we'll be have to go live one day because you brought up something that I talk about and you brought up EQ, but I'm not going to go into a conversation about EQ because that's its own discussion on its own.
It's amazing.
I just say I thank grad school for it because I did the class on it. But I'm going to segue into very briefly. You talked about help desk, and I don't necessarily want to talk about what you did at help desk.
Sure.
I want to know, how did you necessarily leverage? How did you put yourself in position to end up transitioning from doing a help desk into doing the Salesforce stuff? Because I always talk about sometimes when people come to me and they want to, like, either they're stuck or they're trying to figure something out, I ask about one of the first things. I say, hey, have you, you know, talked to people at work about like volunteering for something or seeing somebody need help or something? I was like, that most of the time could be your easiest way to get where you're trying to get to. Mm-hmm. Because it is super competitive. But if somebody that got a higher position that could vouch for you, you can help them out enough, you know, because a lot of stuff they don't want to do, shoot, it could be some simple as documentation. They didn't throw your way and you did it. You never know what type of favor, you know, that can get you. But how were you able to pretty much do something that's totally different from what you were doing day to day and to just say, hey, look at me, I'm over here, I'll do it. Right. Like, how was you able to do that?
Great question. So I think the first week or two there, I figured out I was going to get bored. I'm sure some people feel that experience of just like hating their job. And I didn't hate the people. There are a lot of things I didn't hate about it. I just felt so uninspired. So I want to give that emotional state that I was in for the full picture here of like, sometimes when you are feeling so emotional, and these are the conversations I have, I feel like these are people who never make it to the call with me, I think, because they are discouraged by the free advice I give them. And that's fine. Like my free advice is there. There's nothing that'll put you from the pit of like not wanting to, you're like getting you to that next step without addressing the fact that like you need to do something about how you're feeling and you've got to get motivated. And motivated is such like a contentious word for a lot of people because they think that motivation is all it takes. It's motivation and like 20% of luck. It's insane. And so I worked at a, you know, when you work at it, and I can't speak for full picture of corporate America, which is amazing because for the past couple of years, I have not worked in corporate America. I've just worked in industry, which is fine. But when you work for like a large company,
I need you to kind of break that down for me. What's the difference of that, you know?
So real quick. So the reason why I'm making that distinction, I'm sure everybody would define that differently, is for what I would quote unquote America, is they're very rigid with the uphill promotions. There's small circles and you have to appease the smaller circles to get further up the like the corporate ladders. That's what everyone says. But the advantage of like a small, medium-sized business, at least from my experience, is that somebody who, when you're in like smaller companies, it means you've got more flexibility. And granted, people get upset because they're like, well, I have to do like the jobs of 12 people. We all need to get paid like in general. But I think what happens, and that's kind of where I was able to use my leverage. I worked for a small, medium-sized business at the time. And some professional purchased Salesforce, several licenses without recognizing the fact that it wasn't an out of box too. And I didn't even have to like get my moment to strike. I was, kind of a newcomer. I was actually supposed to be there part-time, but they knew I was looking for full-time work. So they hired me full-time. But I was kind of putting my hands. I knew I had like done a bunch of help desk setup stuff, so it was easy for me to leverage that experience into like a full time job. But then I was doing a bunch of like anything IT touched, I was my hand was it, and it just worked out because I was like me and one other guy, that was it, and then occasionally another guy, and he was the contractor, so it was very easy for me to get my hands in a bunch of things. And I had really amazing manager who was like very sympathetic to like, okay, Kim's not getting this. not that it happened very often, but there were certain things I was very communicative about what my skills were. But this very enthusiastic consultant who's worked for the business for years, so he practically is full time, he observed that I was like always getting my hands dirty, building. I had actually built Jira, a really simple Jira help desk for the company. I had built a library for us to document our stuff, especially since I knew that like this wasn't going to be my forever job.
Call you
job.
Kim the Builder.
Yeah. You know, I like building. And it's not even like, you know, I'm sure maybe somebody further down the line was like, what on earth did she build? I'm like, but I built it. Can't front me on that. So this is like the lesson, at least from that exposure and experience in general, is building a reputation of doing is the first step in all of this. And you can't build a reputation of doing without having a record, right? And so that's where you're joking about me being a builder, is because I had done two or three other things. I was always talking to the people there and like always talking to, like, if I got bored one day, which happens, you know, there's not a help desk ticket every day. I would occasionally, like, I had met some colleagues like on the floor, especially our sales reps, and be like, what can I do to make your job easier? And when you ask those questions, because by the way, these are the same skills you find in a BA work. So now you're discovering why. I didn't know it at the time, but I should have known that I was supposed to be a BA because I was good at that. But I eventually figured out like, hey, we should do this and this and this. And then that's what gave me the option to build, right? The hey, can I invest a couple hours today doing this instead of this boring stuff? And they'd be like, sure, if it makes my job easier, yes. And so with that reputation that I had built up, he wasn't even my manager directly. Like, he was like manager off to the corner. He had recognized that I was like trying to build up my resume, and he was very kind to be like, I got a project for her. And I think people don't recognize too, that wasn't even my full-time job. This is why I'm talking about, we need to get paid. I didn't get paid enough for what I was doing. But you got to build up experience, right? And I was getting paid. That's what matters.
And I was going to ask you that in a way, because as you know, as I know, we see some of the most entitled people on the TL because they think they deserve to get everything that people that's put a ton of work in. And if you were to tell them what you started off at, whatever you was getting at that time, those same people would say, I wouldn't work for that. And those would be the same people, if you were fast forward 5 years, would be in the same position that they are in now, because they don't know what they're doing.
No,
they
want to
get a lot for nothing.
What I always tell people is, I caught up. You can always catch up. And I could tell you about like my salary journey in general, but I knew that the investment I was putting into that, because I did a brief Google. Trailhead was available even for a lot of people who have been in the Salesforce industry longer than I have. It'd be like, oh my God, it's like Trailhead is a miracle, because I didn't even have that when I was learning. And I'm like, holy moly, how did you? And I like flowers to them, because I don't know how I would have been like in the position I'm in without Trailhead, because I did like one or two badges with Trailhead, and I have different, we don't have to get into Salesforce specifically, but there's advice in there. Everyone's like, oh, you got to do like every training course video available out there. Do what's right for you. I did not have the time. I had different time. I had different, as I just mentioned, I was not in the emotional state of motivation and feeling inspired to change my life, right? So for me, it was 20% of my job. I think I invested like closer to 3 or 4 hours a week doing this portion. And so going through that, I discovered, oh my God, this 20% of my day is something that I look forward to. Like of my week is something I look forward to. Maybe I need to find a career in that. Yeah.
Right. And how long, like how many months did you do that?
Oh, it did not. It was anybody who tells you that like you could do it in like 3 months. I'm like, I hope the stars have aligned. Sucra. Like, like I said, a lot of this is luck. I think sometimes opportunities come your way with luck, and I cannot pretend that luck wasn't impact, you know, like has impacted my career in some way, but you have to, yeah. I know this sounds so like, I really don't like talking about like, you know, the vibes or like, I'm not really big. I don't like introducing spiritual language into the advice that I give, but I do think you have to, at a certain level, be optimistic and motivated enough to recognize that like things will come with time. And so I'm saying all this 'cause I'm very good at being chatty. It took me, I think I discovered Salesforce and I loved it. And then it took me a year. I'd say 8-9 months to get that first job. And I was not Salesforce certified. And that alone, I think, shocks a lot of people in my industry.
So we're going to say we're going to say an average of 5 hours a week for 52 weeks, right?
Oh, and by the way, I'm just talking about at work too.
Okay, come on, say that's 260 hours.
And that's a lot. And then I'm not even talking about the, you know, everyone talks about the 9 to 5 and then the 5 to 9. Yeah, my 5 to 9 was trailhead and watching videos for, oh God, who knows? Probably.
So let's do this times two.
Probably.
So that's half of 1,000 hours. That's 520 hours.
Easy. I think easy because, and you're talking about like, you know, the 5 days in the week. Let's play conservative and put it around there too, because I'll include the hours that it took for me to Google a bunch of interview questions, the time that it took to go, you know, sneaking away during a lunch break to have a phone call with a recruiter. Hey, y'all can't lie.
Look, you gotta do what
y'all have done it. So I,
you gotta do what you gotta do. I'm talking about, you know, go to the car. Hey, yeah, I can meet you at this time. You know what I'm saying? Using the company resources to study for the new job you're trying to get. Look.
Oh, hey, yeah. I mean,
y'all done did it.
Yeah. We have to be careful. be careful with the company resources thing. The only company resources thing I'm talking about is the training, because they benefit from it. Anything else, there's an asterisk there, right? But
For me, it's more so like a learning, I use a little like cyber or something like that. Like something like that. That's general. Like I'm just looking up skills that I can do labs.
And stuff, you know, the consultant, I mean, the person who finally opened that door for me to actually help at work. Because the hard part is getting the work experience. I don't want to say it's easy, because it's not. It's still, we just talked about how many hours I put into all that studying, but it's okay. How about this? It's harder to manufacture experience. That's what it is, because and this is why a lot of people I've talked to, because I've been entertaining, you know me, I like my options open, and I've been entertaining, like, what does it take to become a product manager, for example? And anybody that I talk to who's a PM right now, including my boyfriend, he was talking about how it's much easier to transition into a new career at your company. You can always, like, because you don't have to go through this back and forth of like talking experience, talking about projects. What if we just like get you in front of a project? And so when we're talking, all these new folks are like, okay, I want to go into tech. What does your company do right now with tech? What tech are they using? How can you bring value to them? And so you have to be vocal with your boss, or if you're not even comfortable with your boss, that's already a bad sign. You need to talk to a different boss. Like, hey, I'm interested. I've been like entertaining this. Like all the people that I've had conversations with, especially for like marketing, for example, when I moved to a different company, I had finally had my admin job, but I had not touched Salesforce Marketing Cloud at all. My first exposure to that platform was the marketing director has been talking about purchasing this additional tool, and I already had Salesforce experience. So after this great conversation I had with one of the like leads, this was just a casual lunch, man. Like, we weren't like really talking business, but I was just like, once again, if you regularly get comfortable with figuring out how can I make your job better, I think that's the best advice that I give anybody transitioning. Learn how to make someone else's job better. And that's advice that I've been given over the years, because when you make someone else's job easier, they get promoted. And then when they get promoted, a spot opens up. Everybody wins. Like, we can all win.
Right. Yeah. And that's also, that's like one of the things I tell people to ask in an interview. Like, when they talk to the manager, like, how can I make your job easier? They always love that question. I promise you, they always love it.
Yeah.
But that's dope. You know what I'm saying? Now I'm seeing that you can talk like me. So I know for a fact we'll run some other stuff back because it was getting good.
Yeah.
I want to go into, so you pretty much help pretty set, build the platform, Salesforce, and help set that up at the company. And then you had help, but you know, you got all the experience. You can quantify everything you did, which is big. I always tell people, if you can quantify stuff on your resume, do it, because that stands out even more. But we've did a lot of talk about Salesforce.
Oh,
but
sure.
You know what? The viewers who is watching it, can you give them probably briefly 3 minutes of kind of like what Salesforce is?
Yeah. So like Salesforce is a fun thing because it's a, it's the world's number one CRM. Basically any, customer relationship management system that like the majority of like companies like American Red Cross, Walmart, gosh, I gotta come up with a few more here, but, anything you are wondering, like how do they, manage their customers? How do they manage their product? Salesforce is one of the big ones. CRMs providing that service. And so so what's really interesting about Salesforce itself, the reason why it's also so lucrative is because they're able to kind of deliver results on the like the sales side. They're helping people build effective work systems. So they're able to track any activities that are happening in their business. And then not even getting into like, because I kind of lean in like the sales side, but they have several types of products. If I had to put it simply, something that David Liu, I'm butchering his name, from SF99, he put it best. It was just like, it's a collection of Excel tables. And so, you know, you've got like, what are the things that are relevant to like capturing account information? This. That's one table. But how do you connect it with another table that has contacts? This. And so they're all connected somehow. And so inherently Salesforce is really, is simply a CRM, but it's just evolved into this, like this product, which I know a lot of people are very, very passionate about the product itself. And like, maybe I'm not, maybe I don't go that far, but the reason why I liked it, like gravitated to it, is because it's a skill that's really easy. Like, I felt like the pivot for me was so easy. And like, eventually you'll get to the point where like, you have to like introduce AI into it, because all your new little chat bots, like they have to respond some way. They take that action. You can build in cloud, call centers into your integration. There's just so much potential for it. But you know what happens when you've got choice? It needs to be built. There are decisions that have to be made in the background to determine how it works. And so I have clearly found a community that makes it easy for me to like kind of meld the things that I like to do. And that's where, like, there are architects. There are architects in any field, any cloud field, make bank, because those are the people who can make or break a project. If you can't build it a certain way to the client's liking, and I'm obviously talking about just consulting, but like if you were like working at the company, you got to build it in a way that will allow the company to flourish and will make executives happy and that sort of thing. But for me, as so the Salesforce part is like the Salesforce that's to itself is like can be described very simply, but because it needs to be customized and built, that's when you can go down the rabbit hole of like, what are these different products that they sell? Like Salesforce, the company purchased like Tableau, they purchased like Vlocity. They purchase these companies because they know the software, the more it integrates with things and the more gets into the product, the better it is for their selling point, right? So.
Nice breakdown of that. You know, and I like that you pretty much used the KISS method on that and keep it simple, stupid. Always works. Yeah. That's dope. I know it's funny that you said Tableau. Like, it's really not dumb, but I'm learning how to use Tableau a little bit at work.
Yeah,
which makes a little sense. However, we're about to move over to a platform where Tableau will be rendered useless. So I'm really only doing it just to help them, is because I have this experience with, you know, ServiceNow and stuff, even though I didn't do the reports and crap of ServiceNow, but it's not hard to do.
I do have a story though, because I almost got looped into some other stuff. My company at the time was entertaining ServiceNow, which is a very small but competitor to Salesforce. If there are any ServiceNow folks, they would definitely correct me when I say this, but my initial impression of the tool was that it leans a lot heavier on manufacturing. That was who the product was originally made for, and I didn't really particularly have an interest in it. But when you are thinking one way, like, oh, I'm going to go the Salesforce path, but then I knew the company was kind of talking about ServiceNow, do not say no. And never hurts to learn another thing. I went through some initial training with ServiceNow. And if anything, it solidified my interest in Salesforce. And I wasn't going to walk away from a paycheck, right? So I still learned the tool. And if anything, it gave me the exact proof that, you know, if someone gives me a new tech, I'm good. Like, I'll go through it. If you give me the resources, I'll go through it. And I don't think, especially for cloud computing, we need to, and for my own ethics, that's why I hyper-focus on Salesforce, because I don't want to gear anybody in the wrong direction as far as like any specific advice, because every industry, every, you know, specialist, any specific tech has like kind of different trends. But if there's any general advice that I would give about cloud computing is the system, like the business will move on without you. So if you are ready to like hone in and take the moment to learn their tools, the quicker you get at it, the more desired you are. But you also have to recognize is that you do need to, if you want to make money, you have to specialize. So it's like everyone's going to have that fighting battle of like, how do I become a more well-rounded professional, but also like specialized? And the answer is there's no one size fits all answer. It depends on your experience. It depends on like, so that's why like the fact that you want to learn Tableau is excellent. And I'm sure if your company makes it, renders it meaningless, you're still going to have to do some type of reporting that's similar, right? Like, I think we get all caught up in innovation. We get all caught up in innovation, but ultimately what happens is just one feature does one or two extra things that's different than the other, but like it's a transferable skill and you know all about that, right? So
yeah definitely. Yeah, no, my gripe is because of the way it's being utilized and why it's it makes more work than somebody needs to do, but yeah, it's cool. I mean, I'm not tripping on that, but definitely a good story. That's how it is normally. Like, I know for me, my last company, we were using, well, Splunk bought Phantom, and I think they changed the name to Splunk SOAR or whatever. In the middle of that, and our Splunk architect, the client said, hey, you know what? We want to move over to Palo Alto XOR because they bought Cortex. Mm-hmm. So I know how to work two SOAR tools now opposed to just one, which is already hard enough to get your hands on.
Yeah.
And like you said, so it doesn't hurt, you know, to always try to learn something else, which is dope. So don't say no. Expand your skill set because, you know, the brief 6 months of whatever you're doing in Tableau, if it's good enough, you can go work somewhere where they just need somebody to do Tableau and you niche down to just use it in Tableau.
I interviewed for a company when I was first starting out, like just as I graduated, and they were like, oh, well, the job includes Tableau. We need you to do a project. I had never touched Tableau. And so anytime you have access to, that's the last thing too I should have included was, if you have access to a tool that costs like thousands of dollars, do something. All those student all of those opportunities I had for student license and like student prep and training, so many regrets about saving my money. Because like when, you know, because at that point, if I had to start school all over again, I would have just like joined like some sort of cert prep club.
Yeah.
Something like the amount of time I had then versus now. Because like, after I'm done with work, I'm done with work. And I sympathize with students. But I think now I recognize the privilege, right? It's kind of
complicated. Yeah, I definitely feel that. I mean, I try to be done on certain days, but you know, the show must go on. I got to bring y'all this. You know what I'm saying? Y'all watching right now, make sure y'all go subscribe to the Patreon.
Yes.
Because this is hard work, because I'm doing this after I've already been working today. But what I want to segue into now is, because it's also the spotlight for you, because I have like the really best thing I do like about YouTube, somebody's always on YouTube. And so it could be something I did a year ago, almost 2 years ago. Somebody finally said, oh, I just found your content. Thanks. Oh, hey, how do I get in contact with this person? So now I want you to bring up or talk about, you talked about it a little bit, but talk about kind of like what was the desire behind Lipstick and Tech, and you know, what you pretty much your pitch, like you did earlier.
Sure.
Pitch it again. And, you know, for those people that are watching right now that, you know, say, hey, I got transferable skills. How do I, you know, get better at Salesforce?
Yeah. You know, so this is one of those things where my earlier advice about participating online is like, there's definitely an ROI there, because I initially started Lipstick and Tech. And first of all, I didn't want to tie it close. I think when I came up with the name, I wasn't tying it so much to Salesforce. I had actually been tying it into, you know, as a Black woman in tech, I was very interested and motivated and inspired by a lot of the women surrounding me. And I think there was something about the way that I went through academics that I, you know, I think every woman resonates with, like feeling like they have to fight this, like, male archetype in the tech space. And I put on lipstick. I'm very feminine, which is fine. And I go to work in dresses. Like it felt like, it's funny, I almost joke that it's like sticking it to the man a little bit. Like no pun intended, but for me, that was such like one of my foundations of really building that blog and just talking about general career topics was giving the advice to what I wish I had had when I was in college. That was really what had inspired the initial, I guess the pitch, right? It was a blog. That's where it started. And then as I was going through my career, there's nothing wrong with, I'm very big contender of, I think Ari Hale, actually is the coach, and she, I love that the way that she phrased it was a lot better than, or eloquent that I'm going to say, but you can always change your mind about like how you're going with your career, with your vision for like your business and stuff like that. And I started out as a blog, and then I knew that I wanted to build out a business of something. I am still with school. I'm going to go through another evolution in my business, but I have entertained the fact that I could also go into Salesforce consulting on my own. That vision is starting to change a little, but with that interest, it kind of evolved into like, well, I made this like transition. I'm starting to discover that like there are people who want to transition, but they had no idea how to do it. And that's what came up with the idea of like, you know, maybe I need to talk about Salesforce specific, because I did not see anybody. And I was so wrong. There were so many people. But I think there's something about, once again, going online, like what is out there, communicating with people, learning about communities, and like Salesforce has their own Tide stuff. But like, if you're not in Salesforce, you're not going to find it. So that's what kind of evolved into like me making blog posts about it and putting myself out there as like, I want to help other people get involved with it. YouTube is very slow for me because I've been obnoxiously particular about things that don't matter. But it's, I think through actually taking on consulting calls, and I was, resume stuff is kind of on pause, but like I do resume audits, and it gives me a lot of ideas of like, what are the things that people are struggling with? Because what people are struggling with can always be turned into content for the betterment of the community. And so I really encourage anybody here who is interested in Salesforce to go to lipstickandtech.com. I could not tell you enough about, I've put in two really extensive resource list pages, because I don't think, as my help, I do charge, but the resources are out there. I'm not going to cap information. I will, like, you just have to put in the work. And so I'm, you know, so that turned into also, you know, cute little merch. I'm actually wearing it because I like the sweater a lot.
yeah, and
but also the
is
study
that the Powerpuff
guides.
Kind of font, Powerful Girls font.
Cloud Computing, I recognize babe. That. Again, okay. Feminine touch to it, and I grew up loving it. But yeah. The
that would make it kind of rowdy, rough boy.
Nice, they were the best. But I think that, like I said, all of this kind of evolved from a blog. I was grateful that I kind of won this like scholarship through, funny enough, Stripe. Stripe had a scholarship to help women launch their business. And we have Stripe.com to thank for bringing lipstick and tech into business. And I am very grateful for the kind of the side hustle that turned into eventually a community of, and me discovering, kind of discovering myself through the help of people. And I, that's why volunteering is like, you know, I cannot volunteer anymore of my time. But that's why you got to reach out. You have to research the nonprofits. By the way, lipstickandtech.com has all of this stuff, so I'm not going to ramp on like pages stuff.
It's going to be in the description, guys. Don't worry. It'll be
in the but yeah, I mean, I invested the time because I knew that I think although, you know, I was able to like leverage the fact that I was helping people, and speaking of, you know, personal brand things, it doesn't help in my Salesforce career, but I feel so much better as a woman in tech by supporting other women in tech. I feel better as an African-American woman than I'm helping other African-American women. And you know what? Everyone else, if you want to say hi, say hi. Like, there are great people out there.
No, I think it does help. I think when somebody can research somebody and just see who they are as a person, it helps a lot. Yeah. I speak for myself. I know it helped for me. So, yeah. I think it helps. And I also was going to say that the feminine touch is appreciated because this is a male-driven industry. And I'm not trying to look at men all day. Like, women do bring in the balance of, like, actually coming in, like, you know, smelling nice, wearing nice clothes. I try to have some day, you know, most of the time, either how I'm feeling, if I got up early enough, good outfit. But I always try to make sure I smell good and look good. But, you know, that's not what we always see. And that's, you know, so it is a breath of fresh air. And as for me, anybody can ever tell you if they work for me. Like, even right now, one of my, me and my other coworker, we're considered new. We've been there, like, I think I'm close to month six. She's close to month five. Mm-hmm. She's a Black woman. And I always make sure that I don't let nobody necessarily do them the wrong way, because I've seen to where they don't do the right thing by y'all. Like, you'll make concerns or say things and they just kind of ignore them or whatever. I'm like, nah, get this done.
Yeah.
It took us a week to get access to something we could have got in an hour. Like, I was like, come on, bro.
Well, you know, and that's the other thing too. I think I don't know. There's something about Twitter. I feel very much more vocal on Twitter and sometimes even Instagram than I have on the blog. But I know for me, if I have a few, like, maybe more personal blogs on there, but I know for me, it was so important to be myself. Because when you shield yourself, like, I understand a level of, like, you want to separate work from business, but I have found for myself that I was very pleased to have my lead when I finally got to meet her in person recently, that she picked up on the fact that, like, I know when to be professional when I need to be professional, but, like, she was pleasantly surprised, like, how personable and, like I wasn't, like, really rigid. And there's something about being vulnerable on the internet that kind of shakes you a little bit. And I don't think there's anything wrong with being that vulnerable. And I'm not talking about just men. I'm talking, you know, like, just women or just men.
It's in general.
Yeah, just in general. And so I think that's sort of like, and this, there's no way you can't convince me this part of this is because of age. Like, I'm getting there too. And I'm like, why did I care about that? And I think part of it is because you want to appear, like, professional. And, like, sometimes it's fine. And that's why you have to join companies with cultures that are fine with people being human. Like, you have to just, like, come forward with that. And then as far as that includes the way you dress is a self-expression. The way I get upset about people talking about hair as a Black woman, I just, to my core, do not talk to me about hair or do not police my hair. I do not have to deal with that, but I have a Black mother. I am but yeah,
I got two little girls.
That is a sore spot, and we need more of us in the office giving perspective about things. All these PR nightmares that you see in this world is because there was one less of that community in the room, and the business decisions that they are making for the world is because there isn't enough of it in the room, or they're not. And this is the worst part about all of it. It's not that, don't get me wrong, I want more of them in the room. But the other thing too is that if they're not listening, it's even worse. And, like, I feel like sometimes I fight that dichotomy of, like, the stereotype of a loud Black woman, but at the same time, I know people a lot louder than me. Like, that's the whole thing. Like, that's not the point. The point is that you did not listen to the fact that I think we should be doing X instead of Y. And somebody's ego is being struck in the process of this. And it's incredible that, like, these are the things that, like, and that's why, like, I talked about earlier about emotional intelligence. Like, we have to accept the fact that as tech people, there's also conversations that are happening about politics. I want to at least equip entry and mid-level professionals with those first steps in their career, because they will approach the political conversation there. And maybe in my next evolution as a professional, I will be more versed to have these conversations, because I don't want to, once again, very big about not giving advice that I don't have. But I know if we equip people with confidence in their transitions to new careers, that confidence, when they get to that next stage about politics, they'll be ready. Because the politics conversations, those are happening through confidence, through emotional intelligence, like conversations that they're having with people. But you have to equip them with like the first foundation. The first foundations is like, are they tech savvy? Are they motivated? Are they interested? Do they have the right systems in place to talk to recruiters? And these are all gained through experience.
Man, wow. You know what? You said a lot, and I'm like, man.
I talk too much. Awesome. I have a lot to say, man. I have a lot to say.
No.
I'm ready. To go about your way and let me fly. Yeah.
See, my father, it's perfect what you said. You know, that's why I said I need to bring you back when I go live, because we had probably like 5 hours of like concert we could get into. But I already know how it is on my side of town. It's getting late and them girls and they're getting rowdy. That's why I had my mic muted mostly through the thing.
Oh, you're
they
good.
Back there making noise.
I couldn't hear.
That's the reason why I muted it. but this has been dope, man. This is as soon as I hit stop, we're gonna work on something else, because you brought up some things that I haven't talked to with, like, you know, other people that have been on, you mm-hmm. know what I'm saying? So I feel like we're right here right now. But I appreciate you for being on the pod today.
Thanks.
So we already know the people, they can come find you at lipstickandtech.com. Do you want to give them your socials where they can follow you on like Twitter or so Instagram?
Yeah. So all the socials are of the same handle, at Lipstick and Tech, fully spelled out. So hopefully catch you there. But this has been a really great opportunity for me to kind of voice what I've been feeling. What's my soul?
Yeah,
it didn't have to be tech related, right? So.
Right. Yeah. And I appreciate that for you laying it out, because, of course, it's called the Textual Talk Pod, but it's also really geared towards Black people and different mm-hmm. issues we face, whether it be in office or out of office, or the representation that we don't see, as a small child of us being in these type of roles. So mm-hmm. I'm never going to stray away from these things, because these are things that, I felt or dealt with, indirectly mm-hmm. throughout my career. So it's definitely, this has been a good one. Hope you guys enjoyed it. We're going to run this back. It's going to be live, and maybe we even throw some QA things in there to where, I don't know. Yeah. We're going to do something. But I appreciate everybody for tuning in. And y'all know what I say, man. Let's stay textual.